Company versus Picard. I want to correct it. It isn't Lessing. It's the James Michael Leasing Company versus Picard. Mr. Fertile?
Please the court, on behalf of the appellant, PACCAR, Inc., Jeffrey Fertile of the law firm of Hinshaw & Culbertson. This is a diversity case that comes before the court arising out of an alleged violation of the Wisconsin Lemon Law. It's claimed that PACCAR, Inc. violated the Wisconsin Lemon Law when it did not provide a proper refund within 30 days. The parties filed cross motions for summary judgment. The district court denied PACCAR's motion for summary judgment, granted the plaintiff's motion, and awarded double the amount of the purchase price of the vehicle involved and reasonable attorney's fees. Two primary issues on appeal. Did, first of all, PACCAR comply with the Wisconsin Lemon Law when it tendered a refund consistent with the provisions of the statute and predicated that refund upon a formula set forth in the statute for the reasonable use calculation? The district court did not directly address that. Second issue, if in fact there was a violation of the Wisconsin Lemon Law, what pecuniary loss was caused by any violation of the statute? Again, an issue that the district court concluded that in all circumstances under the Wisconsin Lemon Law, pecuniary loss means double the amount of the purchase price. The record reflects here that there was really no dispute between the parties during the initial 30-day period regarding the amount of the gross statutory refund. The amount in dispute eventually came down to the reasonable use calculation that was deducted from the amount due and owing the consumer under the statute. Even that dispute centered upon the fact that PACCAR had predicated its reasonable use deduction based upon a statutory formula which allowed the manufacturer to take the amount of miles that were on the vehicle when the first defect was reported over a denominator of 100,000 and then times the full purchase price. It was PACCAR's position that reliance upon that particular formula in the statute was sufficient to create compliance with the Wisconsin Lemon Law.
So let's get to the lien situation.
Sure.
Because you argued that your client wasn't obligated to actually pay the lien because JM Leasing rejected the refund and said it wouldn't return the truck. But if we accept that your client's duty to pay the lien was told by their actions because of their rejections, why wouldn't the obligation arise again when they actually return the vehicle?
Well, Your Honor, the problem with the circumstances regarding return of the vehicle were, I guess, unclear and confusing in the sense that, first of all, the statute says that there was no obligation on the part of the consumer in these circumstances to return the vehicle until the refund was actually tendered and accepted. Secondly, that in addition to that obligation, the consumer would have had the obligation to make arrangements to transfer title and to execute any documents. This vehicle was returned to the dealer by JM Leasing without even advising PACCAR, Inc. that that was going on or what the reason was for taking the vehicle back to the dealer. Furthermore, it was done under circumstances wherein an email a day earlier, JM Leasing indicated that they were not accepting the refund and that in addition, they would not be returning the vehicle. I mean, once the vehicle was returned, PACCAR, Inc. contacted them again by email and inquired as to, well, I assume you want the refund now. Tell us where to send the checks and when we can pay off the lien. And in response to that, JM Leasing indicated that we do not accept the refund, we don't want the refund, and that's what ended it. And then eventually they commenced suit against PACCAR after the 30-day period expired. Now, the point of it is, this whole situation with...
Now, the lien amount was fixed, right? So I'm trying to understand why rejection of the refund amount should affect the payment of the lien when the lien amount is fixed.
Sure. Your Honor, by statute, the statute links the payment or the refund to the consumer with the payment of the lien. In other words, it directs the manufacturer to pay the amounts due the consumer and to the lien holder. And then, furthermore, the statute's somewhat unclear, and then it drops down and says that the consumer needs to be paid the refund within the 30-day period. So by linking these two obligations together, the fact that JM Leasing would refuse to accept the refund that was due and owing them placed no further obligation upon PACCAR to pay off the lien under these circumstances. The two are linked by statute. And I think it's an absurd construction of the statute under these circumstances to suggest that where the consumer rejects the refund, tells the manufacturer we're not returning the vehicle, that the manufacturer is somehow still under an obligation to refund directly to the lien holder the lien and leave the vehicle in the possession of the consumer with a free and clear vehicle and with still the issue of the refund remaining. You know, the statute indicates, and in the Marquis case, et cetera, that the reason we have the double damages and the 30-day provisions is to give manufacturers incentive to rapidly process refund amounts. And the Marquis case, which was decided at least at the Wisconsin Court of Appeals level, went on to indicate that when the consumer essentially fabricates or thwarts the ability to get the refund through, that does nothing to promote the statute. In other words, to promote the policy behind the statute of getting prompt and efficient refunds to consumers for allegedly lemon law vehicles. So under these circumstances here, where the consumer absolutely refused to accept the refund and in fact told the manufacturer that they weren't returning the vehicle because of that refusal, there was no further need to, under those circumstances, refund the lien amount.
Let me ask you a question about the lien amount here, too. At any point in this process, did your client ever have a good argument that the responsibility for paying off the lien should be shifted to the purchaser? I mean, it's obviously the negotiations didn't go well. There was a fight over $53. It became $500,000. There's a lot of little tit for tat and little jabs in this here that probably could have made the negotiation go better. But pointing the finger on your adversary here for how all that unfolded and why you wouldn't have had an obligation at the end of that 30 days to do what the statute tells you to do. One problem I see in that is that I don't see either in the statute or the case law any way around the argument that your client had an obligation to pay the lien off. But during that negotiation, it seemed like your client was trying to shift that obligation to the other side. And if that's the sort of but-for cause of the poison in the negotiations, is that something that should be left on your client's doorstep?
No, Your Honor, and here's the reason why. Originally, I mean, here we have in a rather unusual circumstance, at least that hasn't been reported in any of the appellate case law, where the manufacturer makes the physical tender of money to the consumer within the 30 days. So you've got a check for two separate checks, one separate check for the refund amount, one separate check for the lien, that are delivered to the consumer. The consumer indicates that we don't want to handle both checks. And this is still within the 30-day period. And again, the manufacturer, in an effort to move this thing forward, says, okay, we'll take care of that. We'll pay off the lien directly in order for us to move forward on this particular circumstance.
Well, I guess that's my question is, was there ever a basis for not, shouldn't the first thing your client have said is the statute says we pay the lien, we're going to pay it?
I think maybe in hindsight, that probably would have been the easiest way to do it. As I indicated or alluded to earlier, while there's a case that says, the Marquis case says, there's an obligation to pay these off separately, if we in fact look at the statute and it says there what has to be done within the 30 days, it says pay the refund to the consumer within 30 days, and it doesn't make that that distinction between the consumer and the lien holder, at least in that particular provision of the statute. Now, I guess an argument could be made that under those circumstances, the tendering of two separate checks for the amounts due and owing within the 30 days, one for the lien and one for the other thing, would comply with that particular portion of the statute. But the point, however, is that that wasn't an issue, and never was an issue, at least until after the settlement had fallen through, and or not the settlement, but after the refund amounts had fallen through and suit was commenced. You know, the main problem that this case created, and the main reason that there was any basis to claim a violation, and that is the reliance or the position taken by the consumer in this case, that you could not predicate a reasonable use allowance on the formula set forth in the statute and be in compliance with the statute. Now, I think that the plain meaning of the statute when one reads it, as well as the legislative history which is supportive of that, indicates that the statute defines a reasonable allowance for use that can be calculated consistent with the formula. And it indicates further that a reasonable allowance for use is defined as an amount that does not exceed, may not exceed, the amount of the formula. That, by definition, the plain meaning of the statute indicates that a reasonable use allowance predicated upon the formula or some amount less than the formula is reasonable as a matter of law, and that a manufacturer can indeed rely upon that formula to in calculating its refund. The problem here that that was created is that the consumer decided that they felt that the reasonable use calculation consistent with the formula was excessive, and as a result they took the position that something less should be used. The point, however, is that this formula has no meaning within the context of this statute if a manufacturer cannot rely upon it to calculate the reasonable use allowance under the statute. In this, and that's consistent with the legislative history. While the plain meaning is one thing, the legislative history really indicates here that the reason that formula was put in was for the exact reason that this case is going on, and that is that where there was uncertainty over the amount of the reasonable use allowance, the formula did away with that. And as a result, a refund that PACCAR calculated based upon that reasonable use allowance was indeed correct. It tendered that amount to the plaintiff. And secondly, it made the arrangements to pay off the lien. And the whole portion of this thing was scuttled simply by the consumer deciding that the refund amount was not adequate, even though it was consistent with the statutory circumstances. One last word I wanted to indicate before moving on here, and that is that there was another significant issue that arose in the case because of the unusual circumstances that occurred here, and that is, what is the amount of the pecuniary loss that was caused by a statutory violation? The district court, as well as JM Leasing in this case, took the position that regardless of what happened or what the basis was for the violation, that the pecuniary loss was always the double the amount of the purchase price of the vehicle. It is the position of PACCAR in this case, consistent with the case law, that in order to recover damages under the Lemon Law statute, you must be able to establish that those damages were caused by a violation. And in this particular case, the violation that was being alleged by JM Leasing was that the reasonable use calculation was excessive. And at best, since the amounts that were physically tendered to the plaintiff, the plaintiff's damages that were caused by any claim violation amount no more to any difference between what the appropriate reasonable use allowance was under the statutory formula as to what could be calculated as a matter of law. Accordingly, that the district court erred when it found as a matter of law that the full amount of the purchase price was the damage. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Fertel, Mr. Magna.
Thank you, Your Honors. If it please the court, every issue in this case has been decided by Wisconsin courts. Every single issue. The Marquez case, which was not mentioned in either of the appellant's first brief or second brief, lays this out, that both when we're talking about a refund under the statute, the refund is a refund to the consumer and to the secured party, to the lender, as their interests appear. That's the refund. The refund has two components, the amount that the consumer gets back and the amount that the lender gets back if there's a lien. Marquez 1, the Court of Appeals, dealt with this right on and said the manufacturer must issue two checks when there's a lien, one to the consumer and one to the lender. And those two checks must be issued within the 30-day compliance period. The Lemon Law in this case was violated when the manufacturer did not issue both of those checks. The manufacturer did tender a check to the plaintiff, James Michael Leasing, and James Michael Leasing had the check in his hands. It was the wrong amount, but they tendered it. They can't force him to keep the check. It was given to him, no different than serving a subpoena on someone who you hand it to and they don't want it and they throw it back. I mean, appellant tendered a check to James Michael Leasing. It was the wrong amount, but they tendered it. What they didn't do is pay off the lien. Had they paid off the lien, we would then have a situation that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals addressed years ago in the case of Church, which is also a controlling case in this set of facts. And that simply says there's 30 days to comply. There's no doubt about that under the Wisconsin Lemon Law. But people may have disputes during that 30 days. They may enter into some type of negotiations. I want this much. I don't want to give that much. And that's what happened in Church. But that's exactly what would have happened here had the appellant paid off the lien. But if the appellant would have paid off the lien, they had already tendered the check, then we would be here on the issue. If James Michael would have filed a suit, we'd be here on the same issue. Was the refund given to James Michael appropriate? Was it enough? And it wasn't. It wasn't under two reasons. Because of the reasonable use allowance dispute that was raised during the 30-day period. It wasn't raised after the 30-day period. It was raised very simply. The first offer made by the appellant to the client was $117,000 to you, plus we'll pay off the lien for $61,000. Are you in accord with this? Was the question put to my client, James Michael. James Michael responded, we don't feel comfortable with us paying off the lien. You should do that, but you shorted us $53. The response then comes back from PACCAR, yes, we're going to give you the $53, but there's a mileage charge of $3,700. but you should still pay off the lien. So there was confusion, there was negotiations, there was one party wanting more, the other party wanting to pay less, but even on the 30th day, we're still within the time frame to get this case settled, and the truck is at the dealership. It's at the dealership. And the appellant knows how much to pay the lien holder, although they don't. At that point, two prongs are already there. The truck is there. The amount to pay the lien holder is clear, although never paid. And the point at issue was, James Michael says, that's too much. We shouldn't have to pay that type of a reasonable use charge. And the statute says the reasonable use charge is based on a formula that creates a ceiling. And the Tammy case, our Wisconsin Supreme Court, on certification from this court, made it very clear that the amount in the statute, the formula, is a ceiling only, and it can be different. Going back to when this Lemon Law was first came out in 1983, the statute on the reasonable use charge didn't say may not exceed. It said the formula is 100,000 miles. However, 2 years later, that was amended to take away the is. It's no longer an absolute. They took away that formula and said this formula may not exceed the amount when you divide 100,000 by the mileage times the purchase price. So it's very clear. James Michael raised this point on the reasonable use charge immediately when they found out that they were going to be charged a reasonable use charge. It was within the 30 days. So both parties knew we had an issue here. James Michael could not raise this after the 30 days or in a lawsuit. It has to be raised while the two parties can address it and hopefully come to a conclusion as to what, who's right or who's wrong, or should we compromise. And PACCAR had that opportunity, but they refused, and they issued an ultimatum to James Michael. On the 30th day, they said, since you are not going to accept our $114,000 check and not accept that we will pay off this loan, then we want you to get the truck off the premises ASAP, that's in the email, and if you don't, you're going to be subject to possibly storage charges.
Can I stop you for a second? So if your argument is, if they had paid the lien on the 30th day,
yes,
and they had tried to give you this document that you weren't accepting the number for, whether you took it or not, whether it's a subpoena situation so you closed the door on them, it's still your burden then to file the lawsuit if you're getting shorted in that check.
Absolutely.
So all they had to do, according to your position, is pay off the lien on the 30th day. Then it becomes your problem if their check is inadequate.
It's my position, and it's the church versus Christ position. It's the law of the state. That's absolutely what they should have done. Then we'd be arguing whether that check was sufficient that they tendered to James Michael. It wasn't, but we'd be arguing that.
Does it matter at all that the lien holder was a wholly owned sub of Picard? We don't really have that kind of facts in the Wisconsin case, do we?
It doesn't matter at all. In Marquez, the lien holder was Mercedes-Benz Financial. It makes it a lot easier for the appellant because they admit that they could have paid this off. They could wire it. It could be paid off in minutes. Whereas if it was Wells Fargo in California, it might be a little more difficult. But here it was absolutely, they could have paid this off. And they never paid it off. one thing under the Tammy case that I wanted to point out, because there's some confusion in reading the brief of the appellant. Tammy addressed the issues that were certified, one of them being a reasonable use charge. But in so doing, the Wisconsin Supreme Court laid out an overview of the Lemon Law, an overview that went on for about 3 pages. And in the appellant's brief, they talk about the sub-A claim, that controls, that means you don't get a refund. Well, that's right. The sub-A claim, the 2A claim under the Wisconsin Lemon Law, doesn't give you a refund. If the 2A claim is violated by not repairing it within the first year, you get damages. However, this case, the James Michael case, is not a 2A claim. It's a 2B claim. And the 2B claim under the Wisconsin Lemon Law says if they fail to repair it within 4 times and the problem continues, or if the vehicle is at the shop out of service for 30 days, then you have a right to make a demand for a refund or a replacement. That's the 2B claim. And in every case, in 25 years, in every case I've handled, we get the pecuniary loss is the purchase price. This goes back to the first Lemon Law case decided in Wisconsin, which was Hughes, which was a Lemon Law case under the 2B provision, and it said the pecuniary loss, if the manufacturer violates the Lemon Law and does not provide a vehicle or a refund, the pecuniary loss is the purchase price of the vehicle. It's not some portion. And in that case, Chrysler and attorney Fertel argued the same thing, that the pecuniary loss should be the out-of-pocket expenses for Chrysler failing to provide a car until 35 days after the 30-day time frame ended. That was their position then. It's still their position now, that now the pecuniary loss should be the difference in the amount of the reasonable use allowance that they proposed and what ultimately they settled for, or ultimately the plaintiff got. So if it could be a couple $1,000s. That should be the pecuniary loss under the Lemon Law. There's absolutely no authority any place for that position. There's authority directly contrary, saying the pecuniary loss is the purchase price, and it's doubled. And that's in Marquez, it's in Hughes, it's in Church. It's the law of the state of Wisconsin that's been developed over the since 1983, when the Lemon Law first came in. So to argue that Tammy somehow says that you don't get a refund, you only get a difference, is not true. It's not accurate. The only time the A claim came up was when the court in Tammy was giving an overview of what the Lemon Law meant and just tracing it. They talk about the sub-A claim for about 2.5 pages, even though Tammy was not a sub-A claim and neither is this. I believe that I have covered everything that needs to be covered.
Thank you, Mr. Macon.
Thank you.
Mr. Bertle.
A couple of points in follow-up. I think Mr. Magnus started off his argument by indicating that, and I think I'll quote him here, all of the cases that have been cited under the Wisconsin Lemon Law have established principles which determine the outcome of this particular case. I respectfully disagree with that. There are a lot of cases in the Wisconsin under the Wisconsin Lemon Law that talk about a refund being the amount of the purchase price and that the purchase price being doubled. in every one of those cases, as we have outlined in our brief, have involved circumstances where the manufacturer, for one reason or another, has made no tender of any money during the 30-day period. This is the first case that has reached the appellate court level in which there is an issue where the manufacturer actually made a tender of funds to the consumer within the 30-day period. And there's no dispute that that's what occurred in this particular case. Now, with regard to Tammy, the Tammy case, which indeed made its way up to this to the Seventh Circuit and then went over to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on some certified issues, involved the issue of what amount of damages were recoverable by Mr. Tammy, albeit under a lease situation. And in that particular case, the Wisconsin Supreme Court indicated that the damages that are to be awarded under the Wisconsin Lemon Law must be linked to a specific statutory violation, and that the amount of the damages as such may vary depending upon the amount the statutory violation involved. And when the court went on to indicate that Mr. Tammy's purchase of the vehicle out of the lease after the Lemon Law notice had been filed were not damages that were caused by a violation of the statute, a clear recognition that damages do not always have to be the full amount of the purchase price. And in this case, I think it's clear from the statutory wording as well as the case law, is if in fact there is a tender under these circumstances of funds, that the only damages the consumer can claim is if the refund is not appropriate. And I think that's what the Church case tells us. In other words, one of the options that the Church case gives a manufacturer if there's a dispute is to pay what they think is owed under the statute. They did that. PACCAR did that in this circumstance. They tendered a check, physically tendered the check on two occasions to JM Leasing, offered it on several other occasions. JM Leasing decided not to take the check. And that started the whole ball rolling, and that the reasonable use allowance dispute was the sole reason that this case was not resolved during the 30-day period. There was nothing, and in fact, I think there was an obligation on the part of the consumer, consistent with Church, that where the amounts were tendered, that they accept the amounts that were tendered and reserve their rights to claim any additional damages under the Lemon Law and return the vehicle. So we would respectfully request that the district court's decision be reversed, consistent with the conclusions we had in our appellate brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.